From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Last year's Oscars were all about the famous selfie, Ellen's pizza, and a whole lot of diversity. Lupita Nyong'o, Alfonso Cuarón as Best Director, 12 Years a Slave, Best Picture. This year, we're back to white. But the anticipation is still on who should win, who will win, and what the movies have brought us this hour on Point. Hollywood, the Oscars, and the Dream Machine. Now you can join us on air or online, where this conversation is always on. What film, what actors get your vote this year, and why? We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Or join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. Behind us right there, a little score from the Grand Budapest Hotel, Wes Anderson's film. It's on the list of Best Motion Picture nominees this year. Joining me now from New York is Wesley Morris, Pulitzer Prize-winning critic. He writes about film for Grantland. Wesley, welcome back. Great to have you here.
Hi, Tom.
Hi, Wesley. It's Oscar time. And with us,
I can't believe it. It's
that so old soon. Calendar just keeps rolling around. With us from Studio City, California, is Gray Drake, senior editor at Rotten Tomatoes, the website devoted to film news and reviews. Gray, it's nice to make your acquaintance. Welcome. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having me. It's Movie Super Bowl weekend. I'm so excited.
Movie Super Bowl. And last year, the little slip that got all the attention at halftime or whatever you want to call it, John Travolta, I love this piece of tape. Here he was, flubbing it all up when he introduces the singer Idina Menzel.
Here to perform the Oscar-nominated, gorgeously empowering song, Let It Go, from the Oscar-winning animated movie Frozen, please welcome the wickedly talented one and only Adele Dazeem.
Adele Dazeem. And I'm reading, Gray, that the producers of the Oscars are just praying that they would have such a wonderful flub again this year. They need crazy stuff in addition to the movies, I guess, to make it the Super Bowl, Gray.
Absolutely. I mean, the Oscars, they run the risk of being very stuffy because no one's drunk enough.
Because they don't have dinner there. But is there no green room? Don't those crowds have a nip before they hit the floor?
Let's certainly hope so. But they have to go all the way out of their seats and go get a drink at the bar. And I think that kind of effort is sometimes a little bit too much when you're wearing stilettos.
There should be somebody to send. After all, they brought in a pizza. Wesley, as a critic for so long now, are you still fired up by the Oscars? Or is this just bread and circus for the little people after you great critics have already made your judgments?
No, critics are relatively irrelevant to this process. Most critics aren't members of the Academy. Mm-hmm. This process drags on, starts earlier, and seems to last longer every year. But at the same time, it's still fascinating because what you are watching come Oscar night is the people who make your movies, your American movies, by and large, tell the world what they think the best of what they do is. And in some cases, it's the best of what they don't do, which is a whole other thing. But I mean, by and large, this is what these are the 6,000 people responsible for movie making saying, this is what we think the best sound editing in a movie for 2014 was. But at the same time, the show itself, you don't really ever know what is going to go right or wrong. And this year there's a couple suspenseful categories still somehow. And it'll be interesting to see how those go.
One of the things that's not suspenseful is the lineup of nominations for Best Actor, Best Actress, Supporting Actor, Actress. It was all white this year after last year's pretty diverse showing across the board. Here's a little sound from The Daily Show's former senior black correspondent Larry Wilmore, now host of Comedy Central's The Nightly Show, commenting on the lack of minorities in the lineup of Oscar nominations.
Tonight, Lee, the Oscar nominations are out, and they're so white, a grand jury has decided not to indict them.
That is pretty good. We had the LA Times. I want to look at the movies. I want to look at the nominations. But the LA Times a couple of years back looked at the Academy of Motion Picture Arts and Sciences and found that 6,000-plus membership to be 94% white and 77% male in 2012. Now, we hear, Gray, that there's been an effort to change that, but these are lifetime memberships. That's not easy to change.
No kidding. Well, they're all so old and they've contributed so much to film, of course, that they deserve respect on some level. But let's – come on, everybody. The fact that they left out David Oyelowo for playing Martin Luther King in Selma is a disgrace. It's absolutely ridiculous.
How do the nominations happen? What is the process, Gray?
You know, it's a lot of math that I don't understand because I'm a movie critic.
Okay, of course, by definition.
And so when nominations come out, they're done individually by the branch of the Academy. Now, Wesley, please correct me if I'm getting this wrong, but the actors branch would have been the ones responsible for recognizing Mr. Oyelowo, and they didn't. They neglected to, and I think that it's one of the worst examples of how the Academy is completely out of touch with filmmaking when they're the ones that are rewarding it.
There it is. Wesley, yes.
I don't disagree with Gray. I just think that the actor category for the last 3 or 4 years has been – you could have taken the 10 people who aren't nominated and had a really intense best actor conversation with those leftover 10 people.
That's a good thing, right? That's a lot of great
actors.
It's a great thing.
And I think that, unfortunately for the Academy, the optics of David Oyelowo not being one of the actual 5 best actor nominees just looks really bad. But I mean, I can make an argument. I mean, I'm inclined to and okay with making a counter argument that basically it can kind of explain how that doesn't happen. I mean, and Gray, I mean, I'm sure you're probably extremely well versed in these sort of non-racial things that happened that didn't break Selma's way in terms of when people actually got to see the movie, whether they did get to see the movie, how they saw the movie. In addition to the sort of what would seem to me to be a not uncalculated series of articles that cropped up around this LBJ conversation. I mean,
you got the history wrong. Shame. And so maybe that knocked them back.
That to me is one of the most disgusting and despicable things I've ever seen in one of these, in any award season. And
so this read all that as deliberate public smearing, I guess you're
saying? It's not an accident. And I think that I think that in the case of Selma, and, you know, I don't want to spend too much more time talking about this because there actually are really more interesting things to talk about at this point. But I will say that Selma was a movie that when I saw it in November felt to me to be the sort of movie that Academy voters, both by dint of its being a very strongly well-made movie and something that speaks to the Academy membership from a subject matter standpoint, just seemed like a no-brainer.
Right.
And then all of a sudden, Ava DuVernay is back. Her back's against the wall, and the movie's back is against the wall. And she's having to defend her movie on this, what I would say is a pocket of you know, there's one tiny problem with the depiction of LBJ that I think is somewhat legitimate. But otherwise, this entire LBJ thing was blown out of proportion, and it really affected both the public and industry perception.
If I may, let us bookmark that right there. Let it stand there. We can come back to it if you want, but I want to get to this list of nominees for Best Picture and hear where you guys come down. We got American Sniper, huge box office success. Does that mean it's the people's choice? I don't know. Birdman with Michael Keaton, Boyhood, 12 years in the making, The Grand Budapest Hotel. We heard that sort of exotic Wes Anderson, wonderful show. The Imitation Game, people loved it, about the code-breaking World War II. Selma, we've looked at, The Theory of Everything, Hawking. Whiplash, the drummer and his kind of Svengali teacher or coach. Here's a little sound from Birdman. This is directed by Alejandro González Iñárritu. It stars Michael Keaton as Regan Thompson. This is a washed-up Hollywood actor famed for playing the superhero Birdman. Wants to revive his career. To do that, he directs and stars in a play on Broadway. Here's a scene, members of the press interviewing him about the project.
Are you at all afraid that people will say you're doing this play to battle the impression that you're a washed-up superhero?
No, absolutely not. Absolutely not. That's why 20 years ago I said no to Birdman 4.
Hold the mask off.
Thank you, everybody.
You do have a mask.
Oh, thanks for coming out. Thank you. We're expecting some great pieces.
Okay. Birdman. And everybody says it's Birdman or Boyhood. Gray, do you buy that? Is it one of those two? Is it that obvious?
I absolutely do. I think that it's between one of those two. But secretly, in my heart of hearts as a viewer, I would love for another movie, I think most likely American Sniper, to sneak in and surprise the heck out of everyone.
Why would you like that one to win? Is that your choice as best motion picture?
You know, it's not. At this point in the awards discussion, I just really like it when anything happens that I'm not expecting, because I think that it's pretty easy to tell when you look at the run of awards what's going to win and what isn't. That's why Best Picture is so exciting this year, because Boyhood and Birdman have been duking it out between all of the voters in every single award ceremony that there is. And so they're also incredibly deserving movies because they exemplify what true creativity and artistry can bring. You know, as far as a different kind of film, they're very exciting.
I want to come back and dissect those a little bit. If you were the entire Academy, Gray, all 6,000 members were you, Gray Drake, who would win Best Picture this year? What
film? It
would
be Boyhood.
Boyhood.
Boyhood, hands down.
I'm going to put the same question to you, Wesley, after a little break here. Wesley Morris with Grantland, please stand by in New York. Gray Drake with Rotten Tomatoes in Studio City, California. We're talking about the Oscars, the Academy Awards, Sunday night. Who should win, who will win, and why? Glory behind us here from Selma, Common, and John Legend there. They're up for Best Score. You can join us as well. Where's your vote for Best Picture this year? Birdman, Boyhood, American Sniper, Whiplash, Selma. How do you, how would you judge? 800-423-8255 is our number. 800-423-TALK. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back.
Now we right the wrongs in history. No one can win a war individually. It takes the wisdom of the elders and young people's energy. Welcome to the story we call victory. The coming of the Lord. My eyes have seen the glory.
One day, when the glory comes, it will be ours.
Tom Ashbrook, this is On Point. We're talking about the Oscars, the Academy Awards, this Sunday night. Who should win, who will win, and why? Behind me right here, the score from The Theory of Everything, of course, about Stephen Hawking. It's nominated for Best Original Score, and that's not all. Best Motion Picture as well. Wesley Morris is with us from Grantland in New York. Gray Drake from Rotten Tomatoes joins us from Studio City, California. You can join us. Where's your vote for Best Picture this year? How do you judge? What's your pick for Best Actor, Best Actress? Make the case. Who moved you? Cumberbatch, Cooper, Keaton, Juliana Moore, Felicity Jones, Rosamund Pike. We heard just a little bit from Birdman. People say it is nose to nose with Boyhood, 12 years in the making, directed by Richard Linklater, of course. A boy and a sister grow up. Ethan Hawke plays the divorced father. Here's a scene. He's talking with his kids, Samantha and Mason, played by Lorelai Linklater and L.R. Coltrane, about communicating better.
But, Dad, I mean, why is it all on us, though? You know, what about you? How was your week? You know, who do you hang out with? Do you have a girlfriend? What have you been up to?
I see your point.
So we should just let it happen more naturally, right? That's what you're saying. Okay, that's what we'll do. Starting now.
Scene from Boyhood right there. 12 years in the making, and you watch them all grow and age. Wesley, Gray, help us out here. Let's just take these two, Boyhood and Birdman. I don't know, as a great critic, Wesley, put these two side by side and think about them with us for a second, the qualities of each, and how would one judge if you had to pick the better?
Well, I don't know a lot of people who dislike both movies. I mean, I guess it's possible to do that. Mm-hmm. So let's just sort of start from this absolute place of there being different movies that have nothing to do with each other,
yep,
and look at them respectively on their merits.
Mm-hmm.
So Boyhood is the story of a family, two parents, they get divorced, they have these two children. The mother basically raises them, the father drops in. He's played by Ethan Hawke, the mother's played by Patricia Arquette. And it is the story of this one, the boy in the family, and he, as he grows over 12 years. You watch him. He's this small, bright-eyed kid.
Yep.
And by the end of the movie, he is a sort of slightly darker, more philosophical college student.
And we're not talking makeup. He's grown up, and you've watched that happen. That in itself is pretty amazing.
You've watched him become the person he's going to be or try to figure out that person. And it really is a kind of astonishing – as a formal exercise, it is astonishing. But beyond the fact that they spent a week, you know, a week every month or a week a year or whatever making this movie for 12 years – is separate from the experience of watching it, where the gimmick, if we can call it that, the conceit falls away, and what you're left with is, I would say, one of the most moving stories on a number of levels that I've seen on this subject. It's the best portrait of a single mother I've ever seen in my life, in a movie, in an American movie, anyway. I think the relationship between the son and the father gets deeper as the movie goes without either person really ever quite understanding the other. And you have this kind of modern American father trying to figure out how to be a father with a different family, which is so typical.
Sure.
And he applies this new lesson to the original family. I think it's beautifully well made. It's beautifully observed. It's really good. I think that when it comes to taking that movie and putting it atop a pantheon of eight movies, or, you know, in the pantheon of Best Picture winners and atop a field of eight movies, I think that some voters, and this is something that I'm hearing people say, and this was a conversation people were having when the movie came out last summer, which was, is that all there is? And they could, some people can't get past the 12 years part. That's all
they see. Time passes, you see that, but where's the beef?
So with Birdman, you have the story of a very famous Hollywood actor who did a lot of superhero movies, who's decided for reasons of artistic integrity that he's giving all that up and he wants to put on a play. And the film is about the production of the play. It is shot in one illusory take, meaning there were several takes and quite a lot of editing to make it happen.
As if.
But it is otherwise, to you and me, a fairly seamless series of takes. And it's entertaining. It's fun. It's smart. It's funny. Some of the performances in this movie are fantastic. I mean, they're all fantastic, but some of them they go slightly beyond that. I think it's a movie that speaks to creative people in a very specific way. Mm-hmm. It speaks soulfully to them. Mm-hmm. I think Alejandro González Iñárritu is a very good director who has finally shed this idea that every film he has to make has to be important. I've previously found him fraudulent. I think this is the first honest thing he's ever done, and it happens to be about artistic fraudulence and artistic truth. And I think it's a movie that, based on how good it looks, Boyhood is not a good looking movie, by the way. It doesn't look as beautiful and as
lush.
Not as formally
it looks real,
yes.
I guess, whatever that means.
But Birdman is a different kind of formal achievement. Yeah. It's a sexier movie than
to the Academy. That probably matters. You've got a lot of people in there doing lighting and camera work and all the rest.
Yes, yeah. I mean, and I think Birdman will pick up some technical awards. It's nominated for several.
So maybe ranking doesn't matter, but if you had to choose between these two, Wesley, the better.
I'd pick Boyhood. I would also pick Boyhood. I mean, I was entertained by Birdman. I think it's very good. I think in its way, it's profound and profoundly shallow at the same time. But, you know, I also think that Iñárritu, it's just a really well-directed movie. This is somewhat similar to the conversations that were happening last year with 12 Years a Slave and Gravity. They're two very different movies that work in two very different ways. And I think that for voters who get to vote on all 24 categories, I think there'll be a splitting of the difference, and Boyhood will win one Best Picture or Best Director, and Birdman will probably win the other.
Great.
And I should also just say, I want to clarify how the Best Picture voting works. Mm-hmm. It is not like the other categories. Mm-hmm. It's very complicated. And in order for this to go in one ballot, more voters have to put one movie at the top of half the lists. If that doesn't work, then the vote-getter with the least amount of votes drops out. So you have seven movies. And that goes on and on until one of the eight movies clears – until one movie clears 50% of the vote – of the first-place votes.
Gray,
that's very elaborate.
No, it is very elaborate. I don't even want to try and get my head fully into that. But, Gray, if it's just you and these two movies and there you are as a critic and you've got to say, all right, I'll go for this one, which would it be, Gray?
Well, I think that what the Academy will reward, just like Wesley, is Birdman. I think that – but, I love Boyhood because of what it – the feelings that it evoked in me while I was watching it. I saw it the same week that I saw Transformers 4, and they're both very different films. And I'm a fan of the popcorn movies. Some of the Transformers movies are tolerable. But I'll tell you what, with the exact same running time, I was able to walk out of Transformers 4 in 90 minutes because I got it.
Yep.
But in Boyhood – at 2.5 hours, I had to excuse myself to the restroom and ran so I wouldn't miss a thing. The movie is like a memory. And somehow, even though my life has been very different from Eller Coltrane's character, it felt like my life.
That sounds like your heart goes there, goes to Boyhood.
Absolutely no question about it. And the reasoning, however, in me thinking that Birdman is actually going to take home the prize, like Wesley was saying, it celebrates artistry. And I think with last year's Best Picture winner being 12 Years a Slave, a very important, very different film, I do think that it enters into the mind of a voter to lighten up if they have the opportunity and celebrate the industry, similar to the win of The Artist a few years ago.
Yeah.
You know, it's mix things up. Keep the audience guessing a little bit. And Birdman, it's Michael Keaton in his underwear in Times Square. People like it. They'll watch that.
Great, Drake. Wesley Moore, stand by. Jeff is calling. Lots of listeners here calling in, and I want to hear from them as well. Jeff in New Orleans. Thank you for calling, Jeff. You're on.
Thank you for having me. I've seen all the movies except for Selma. I think Boyhood is getting a little bit too much credit for the artistry of how long the film took to make. I really think End of the Year, that Whiplash, Imitation Game, or The Theory of Everything would have won just like King's Speech did a few years back. I really think those movies are really great. I think Birdman will be the overall winner, though. Thank you.
Birdman, you're going for, along with our gang here. You mentioned The Imitation Game, of course, the British, crypt analyst Alan Turing, played by Cumberbatch, Benedict Cumberbatch, helped break the Enigma code used by the Germans during World War II. Here's a bit from that.
I like solving problems, Commander. And Enigma is the most difficult problem in the world.
No, Enigma isn't difficult. It's impossible. The Americans, the Russians, the French, the Germans, everyone thinks Enigma is unbreakable.
Good. Let me try, and we'll know for sure, won't we?
Okay, there's one take at a genius. Here's another. Theory of Everything, about the relationship between physicist Stephen Hawking, played by Eddie Redmayne, and the woman who would become his wife, Jane Wilde, played by Felicity Jones. He has this diagnosis of motor neuron disease. We see what that has done to Stephen Hawking over the course of his life, rendering him unable to walk or talk or swallow or move most of his body. They talk about that early, at a young age.
Leave me now.
Are you going to talk about this or not?
Please, let me just go.
Is that what you want?
Yes, it is what I want, so please, if you care about me at all, then please just go.
I can't.
I have 2 years to live. I need to work.
I love you.
You've left her. That's a false conclusion.
I want us to be together for as long as we've got, and if that's not very long, well, then that's just how it is.
Gray Drake, what about these two genius depictions and the movies that bring them to us?
I think those movies both have something in common, and that's that they feature really excellent performances. I'm so excited that Eddie Redmayne is nominated for Best Actor, and I'm really looking forward to him winning. I think that his depiction of Stephen Hawking was absolutely spectacular, especially when you consider the seamlessness of portraying someone with a degenerative disease when you're shooting a movie out of order. That is such a huge undertaking, and he made it look so easy and conveyed so much through so little. I mean, he can't even speak for half of the film.
Jumping in and out of different degrees of disability as he goes.
Absolutely unbelievable. And so he's my pick in that respect. But as far as them in the Best Picture category, I don't think they're the best pictures. I'm happy that they receive nominations because I think they should be acknowledged. But when you're comparing them with the movies that we've already talked about, I think that they're relatively normal films. They're pretty standard as far as the way they've been written. Mm-hmm. They're just elevated by really extraordinary performances because you can never leave out Benedict Cumberbatch in that conversation. Right. He just – time after time, this man can do anything.
He's got a way. Frank in Abilene, Texas. Frank, thank you for calling. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
Glad to call. Mm-hmm. Selma is my pick, although in fairness, I haven't seen any of the others, but it was just such a fantastic movie. I lived through those times. I was 17 when Martin Luther King died, and I just it spoke to me very strongly as to the way things were then and the way things are now. And if you haven't seen it, it's an outstanding, well-directed, well-paced movie.
Frank, I appreciate your call. Wesley Morse, Selma as a piece of film. I was most moved, I think, by the intimacies in it when they depict Martin Luther King, calling to have a gospel song sung to him on the phone in the middle of the night when he's down. When you're in among the people on the Edmund Pettus Bridge and everybody's falling down and you're so close to it. What about it as a piece of film work, Wesley Morse?
It's great. I mean, the scenes on the bridge alone are incredibly – well, they're really smartly directed. I mean, she knows how to shoot those sequences so that they are navigable, so that you can follow the action in a way that captures the chaos without losing the humanity and the, you know, the inhumanity of that assault. And she makes it as absurdly warlike as she can,
yeah,
to convey
galloping horses,
the horror
and
of the incident.
Yeah, yeah. But nobody's talking about it. I mean, our caller is. He's for it, but it doesn't climb further up the ladder. Why do you think not, Gray?
Oh, I wish I knew. I think that as far as voters are concerned, there were some interesting releases as far as screeners went. Nobody got Selma. It ended up without things like SAG nominations from the Screen Actors Guild. But as far as people, I'm not sure. There's never been a feature film about Dr. King. This was the first one, and it was so exceptional, yet it didn't really get the attention I felt that it deserved, and I find it very peculiar. And I would never assume or call racism on anything, not the voters, not the nominations, not, you know, any of the people going to the movies, because I think that's a little too dramatic. Mm. But at the end of the day, you got to start asking yourself, like, this is a fantastic movie that got virtually ignored. So it enters into a really disturbing category of films that perhaps a more learned film person would know. You know, they
I mean,
have
ignored,
a knowledge
but
of
here
film.
It is. It's on the list of nominees for Best Motion Picture of the Year.
Thank goodness.
Yeah, here's a little
good
scene.
Good Lord.
Here's a scene from Selma. Annie Lee Cooper, real figure in the civil rights movement, meets resistance at the county courthouse. If you've seen any trailer, you may have seen this. She goes to register to vote, played here by Oprah Winfrey.
You work for Mr. Dunn down at the rest home, ain't that right?
Yes, sir.
Wonder what old Dunn will say when I tell him one of his gals down here stirring a fuss.
I ain't stirring no fuss. I'm just here trying to register to vote.
Recite the Constitution's preamble. You know what a preamble is?
We the people of the United States, in order to form a more perfect union.
How many county judges in Alabama?
67.
67, and there we have Selma. Wesley, is it all it could and should be, depicting this this singular moment in American history?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's very smart about how it focuses on this moment as opposed to being the story of Martin Luther King per se. It is the story of a handful of leaders, including Lyndon Baines Johnson, who helped get the Voting Rights Act signed into law. I mean, it's a very powerfully done movie that doesn't put the onus of leadership on any one person, while also making a very strong case for the value of leadership.
Wesley Morris, stand by with Grant Land, Gray Drake with Rotten Tomatoes. We've got a lot of nominations to get through here. Not much time. We'll dive in hard. We're looking at the Oscars coming up Sunday. Who should win? Who will win? 800-423-8255. Glen Campbell here. I'm Not Gonna Miss You from Glen Campbell, I'll Be Me. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back.
Imagine having a personal library with over 150,000 book titles, plus magazine and newspapers like the New York Times and Wall Street Journal. Now imagine having a personal assistant read them to you, in the car, on the train, wherever you want. That's what it's like to have Audible.com. On Point listeners get a free audiobook of your choice and a free 30-day trial. Go to audible.com/onpoint. Choose a free title and listen. It's that easy. Go to audible.com/onpoint. That's audible.com/onpoint. Get started today.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about the Oscars, the Academy Awards, Sunday night. Who should win, who will win, and why? Behind us right there, a little bit of the score from Interstellar, Hans Zimmer's score, one of the nominees for Best Original Score. Wesley Morris is with us, Pulitzer Prize-winning critic. He's with Grantland, writes about film, joins us from New York. Gray Drake is here, senior editor for Rotten Tomatoes, and she's all over film as well. You can join us. Where's your vote this year for Best Picture, Best Actor, Best Actress? We're at 800-423-8255. Go to Erica in Winchester, Massachusetts. Erica, thank you for calling. You're on the air.
Thanks for having me, Tom.
Yeah.
My vote for Best Actress is Julianne Moore in the film Still Alice, and it's based on a New York Times bestselling novel by a local Massachusetts author, Lisa Genova, mm-hmm. who happens to be a neuroscientist, and Julianne Moore just got this right on the mark. She is just unbelievable in it. I think she's been nominated 5 times for an Oscar, and this time I really hope she gets it. The proof in the pudding for me was at the end of the movie, I walked out into the hallway, and there were 3 women standing there chatting about her performance, and they were familiar. I believe one of them has a relative with Alzheimer's, and she was just saying she just could not get over Julianne Moore's facial expressions and how much she really, really portrayed somebody with this disease. And I did do a little research into the movie, and Julianne Moore actually spent quite some time with Alzheimer's patients, caretakers, relatives. She said she wouldn't do a movie without really, really being able to understand how it feels to have this sad disease.
And you think she got it? A lot of people are saying the same. She's favorite to take Best Actress this year, I would say, from grazing all the headlines here. We've got just a little bit of that film, Still Alice. Julianne Moore plays a linguistics professor, struggles with Alzheimer's. Here from the movie, she describes what Alzheimer's feels like.
It's not always the same. You know, I have good days, bad days, and on my good days, I can, you know, almost pass for a normal person. But on my bad days, I feel like I can't find myself.
Gray Drake, what is it about this performance that has so much excitement behind Julianne Moore's nomination?
She's always been exceptional as an actress. What a phenomenal performer she is. And Still Alice is just an arrow straight to the heart. It's a heart-wrenching performance. And I'm so excited to see her finally win. I know in my heart of hearts she's taken home every award so far. And this is a lock, everybody. Just mark your Oscar pool, you know, categories now.
Done deal.
She's going to get it.
Wesley, compared to other performances, you've got Felicity Jones, you've got Rosamund Pike with Gone Girl, Reese Witherspoon. A lot of people saw Wild, Marion Cotillard with 2 Days, 1 Night. What do you see here, Wesley, in this category?
I mean, Julianne Moore is almost certainly going to win. It is not a competitive category in that sense. And I would like it for it some year for there to be greater relation. This always seems like a separate category from the rest of what's happening at the Oscars.
Why? What do you mean? Where best actress sounds like a pretty big central deal.
Well, of course, but they're infrequently, you know, especially this year, none of the Best Actress nominees is in a Best Picture nominee except for Felicity Jones, who has, for me, of the five women, the most baffling nomination, both because she doesn't have a lot to do in the film, and I think the part ultimately is kind of a supporting. Her function in the movie is definitely supporting.
As Stephen Hawking's.
The size mm-hmm. of the part feels supporting to me, too. Mm-hmm. Of those five women, I think what Julianne Moore does in that movie is actually really shrewd. She is actually playing the disease. She is playing the sort of the bafflement and the anger and the sort of, she's an intellectual. So I think she's also playing a woman who would try to understand what's happening to her as an academic. I think it's a really smart performance. It's not showy at all. I don't think the movie's very good, but that's a separate conversation. Of those five, I really like Rosamund Pike and Marianne Cotillard. Those are my favorite two. I have no argument against Julianne Moore. I think that Marianne Cotillard in 2 Days, One Night is, she just broke my heart. I mean, just looking at her face, her eyes sort of well up a little bit. I welt up too. I think what she has to do over the course of this movie, which is by the great Dardenne brothers, is just, she's basically fighting for her job. And she doesn't know how to do that. She's a working class woman who is pretty meek and has to find the strength to do something that is not in her emotional constitution to do, which is to ask people to find a way to take a pay cut so she can keep her job.
Yeah.
It's a really beautiful performance. And then Rosamund Pike is just, you know, playing a psychopath in a really smart way.
I always love Marianne Cotillard. Cannot resist that actress. But I've got tape right here of Rosamund. This, of course, is in Gone Girl. Plays Amy Dunn, mysteriously disappears. The spotlight turns to her husband, Nick, played by Ben Affleck, as he becomes the suspect. Here's a bit from the trailer.
What's your name?
Amy.
Oh, Amy.
Beautiful wife, handsome husband.
Wife goes missing on her anniversary.
I had nothing to do with the disappearance. I have nothing to hide.
Seen this girl around here?
She wanted a gun.
Where's your wife, Nick?
Amy's the kind of girl who attracts admirers.
How was your marriage, Nick?
I am in a nightmare.
Rosamund Pike right there in the nominees for Best Actress. Helena is calling from Arlington, Massachusetts. Helena, thank you for calling. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Two very quick comments. Mm-hmm. One, I have a deep principled objection to movies that are, quote, based on a true story but misrepresent history, which both The Imitation Game and Selma do. And I think that's a problem because movies make such a powerful impression that inevitably they leave us thinking we know how it was.
Yes, big issue this year. Mm-hmm.
The other very quick comment is I do not see how there could be a more challenging acting possibility than portraying Stephen Hawking as he deteriorates and the actor, whatever his name is, really did it.
Eddie Redmayne.
I've met Stephen Hawking. Mm-hmm. He's got it. He got Stephen Hawking right.
You go for Best Actor to Eddie Redmayne, then.
Absolutely.
With that, let's look at the competition in that category. Nominees Steve Carell for Foxcatcher, Bradley Cooper, American Sniper, Cumberbatch, we've talked about The Imitation Game, Michael Keaton, we've talked about Birdman, and Eddie Redmayne, Theory of Everything. I've got a little tape of Bradley Cooper here, American Sniper. Of course, this is the huge box office success. Helena's right there for Eddie Redmayne and how he got Hawking. Here's Bradley Cooper getting the Navy SEAL sniper, Chris Kyle.
Do you ever think that you might have seen things or done some things over there that you wish you hadn't?
Oh, that's not me, no.
What's not you?
I was just protecting my guys. They were trying to kill our soldiers, and I'm willing to meet my creator and answer for every shot that I took. The thing that haunts me are all the guys that I couldn't save.
Bradley Cooper beefed up for that role, controversial in its own way this year. Wesley, look at this category. Best actor, pick it apart for us a little bit.
As Grace said earlier, I mean, it's basically, I mean, it's a two-person race, but I mean, Eddie Redmayne is, is basically the front runner at this point, but it's between Michael Keaton and Eddie Redmayne. I am the person who every year just wants, as Gray does, something interesting to happen. I would be excited to see Bradley Cooper win just because it would be interesting. People are, Eddie Redmayne and Michael Keaton are each expecting to get out of their seat and accept the Oscar. I think that there is this momentum building toward Bradley Cooper. I don't know if it'll be enough to keep him from coming in third.
How do the politics of that movie play into the Academy's voting here? You know, there was a split. Was it pro-war? Is it anti-war? It gets wrapped in the flag. Is that a magnet for voters, or does it push them away?
I mean, it probably pushes them away if they have any doubts about it. I mean, that's exactly what's hurting Selma. But I would say, I mean, the thing that I like about American Sniper being part of this conversation is that it's a movie that people actually have seen. I mean, all the movies are hits in the Best Picture category. But I mean, I also object to them all coming out in December. And this is a separate conversation. But this is a movie that people have seen. It is a huge hit. I think that question about the movie's relationship to war and its depiction will be left in the Best Picture category. I don't know. I mean, I'll be curious to see. I mean, I'm excited to see what happens when the name is called. Steve Carell, I just don't think there's enough anything there for people are confused by that performance.
Yeah.
There's not enough momentum with the film. And I think as the callers have noted, and as Gray pointed out, like, I just, the physical, the actor that has done the most physical work tends to win. This is not to take anything away from the ultimate performance, but it does sort of put that actor at the head of the pack. And Eddie Redmayne, his physical transformation from an upright person to someone in a wheelchair, irrespective of it's being Stephen Hawking, is you know, as a technical achievement, quite remarkable. He does something more than that.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, he's got something that I think Hilary Swank has, which is this lovability, this sort of essential goodness that you respond to in this movie. And I think that's something that voters will probably respond to as well.
Clock is ticking on us here, but let's go to Best Supporting Actress. You got Patricia Arquette in Boyhood, Laura Dern in Wild, plays the mother of Reese Witherspoon, Keira Knightley in The Imitation Game, Emma Stone, Birdman, Meryl Streep, Into the Woods. Is it always Meryl Streep when she's in there? Great.
Always. Every single time it's Meryl Streep. With 19 nominations, let's just keep giving them to her. But
you're going to bet against that streak?
I am going to bet against her this time because the clear favorite this year is Patricia Arquette for Boyhood, who has seen a huge amount of support and has, again, won everything prior to this. So she's going to get to put on her adorable, cute nerd girl glasses and give us another heartfelt speech.
That's great. And Best Supporting Actress here, or actor, excuse me, Robert Duvall in The Judge. I have not seen Ethan Hawke. Boyhood, Edward Norton, Birdman, Mark Ruffalo, Foxcatcher, and J.K. Simmons in Whiplash. Let's go to John in Austin, Texas. John, what do you think? You're on the air.
Hey, hi, Tom.
Hi.
Yeah, I got to put my vote in there for Whiplash. It is an incredible movie. It is the tightest, most concentrated film with zero distractions, zero deviations, the performances, the cinematography, the sound, the lighting.
It's got this ambitious young jazz drummer played by Miles Teller.
J.K. Simmons is unbelievable.
As his crazy kind of coach teacher who just pushes him.
Yeah, absolutely. He builds on a character that he creates in Allstate commercials or in insurance commercials
yeah,
and maxes this up to the hyperlink. It is the most. It is a terrific performance, and should win the best movie, but it won't.
let us put it at least in this category. What do you think, Gray? Best supporting actor here. J.K. Simmons have a chance for that over the top, hard nosed coach teacher in Whiplash.
Not only does he have a chance, this is definitely his year. I couldn't agree more. I'm remiss in not mentioning Whiplash more during our conversation because with four of the Best Picture nominees being based on real stories. What has happened to the other four is that since they're not true, they're so much more interesting this year. They're just infinitely more interesting. And Whiplash definitely is one of the most fantastic movies of the year, for sure. I can't wait to see him and his speech, because J.K. Simmons gives good speeches.
Yeah, he brings it. I want to talk for just a second about Best Documentary. Citizen Four is in there. Of course, that's the story of Edward Snowden and Laura Poitras, who took her camera along with Glenn Greenwald. This goes very much into the real world, all that NSA stuff that came out. 2013, she received this anonymous encrypted emails from someone named Citizen Four, who claimed to have evidence of illegal surveillance programs run by the NSA. Months later, she flew to Hong Kong. This is documentary. This is her life. To meet the man, turned out to be Edward Snowden, filmed their meetings there. Here from the movie, she reads one of those initial Snowden emails. Imagine this dropping into your inbox.
I am a senior government employee in the intelligence community. I hope you understand that contacting you is extremely high risk. For now, know that every border you cross, every purchase you make, every call you dial, every cell phone tower you pass, friend you keep, site you visit, and subject line you type is in the hands of a system whose reach is unlimited, but whose safeguards are not.
Wesley Morris, I knew Laura Poitras from her journalism, but when you see, which is film, when you see the power of, and the story, the real story is amazing enough. The power of the way she portrays it is really something else. Does she have a chance at taking the Oscar?
I mean, I think this movie will probably win. I frankly think, you know, it belongs in the Best Picture category. I mean, it works as
Best Picture, period,
a thriller
outside of documentary. You mean?
Yes. Wow. I think it works as a thriller in a very sort of classical paranoid 70s thriller mode.
Yeah.
It rarely leaves its hotel room setting, and yet there is an incredible tension in almost every scene. And there's so much surprise poetry that she gets toward the end as the movie is building to the suspense about what's going to happen. And, you know, she's taking something that we already know, that we know in this very specific, broader way, but it's happening in the opposite direction from within this hotel room. It's a really, really good movie. Virunga, which is about apes in the Congo, could upset it, but it seems unlikely.
We'll watch both. I asked, does it have a chance? Silly question. Of course it does. It's been a wonderful evening with Laura Poitras recently. Quite an artist and journalist. This has really been great. We'll be watching Sunday night. We'll be thinking of all your observations. Wesley Morris at Grantland, thank you so much for helping us do this.
Thank you, Tom.
And Gray Drake at Rotten Tomatoes. You're terrific, Gray. Thank you for joining us today.
Thank you. It was a pleasure.
Enjoy Sunday night. We'll go out with Everything Is Awesome from the Lego Movie. Look for it. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.
On Point is a production of WBUR Boston and NPR.